This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Andrew Tan, Group Managing Director of Silver Lake Access, one of the leading enterprise technology software and services company in Asia Pacific. A very good morning to you, Andrew. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well, Philip, and thank you for having me on your show.
You must be keeping very well, because if I look at your 2021 numbers, it was, as you said, a year of two halves. The first half was very challenging. Customers delayed IT project spend, but in the second half, you saw pickup. But honestly, if you look at the 2022 numbers, it has been very impressive to date, has it not? Is this growth and improvement a result of deferred spending now being reflected?
I think it's, a little bit of, both. I think definitely, there was caution, in terms of spend, during the pandemic years. But I guess, during the pandemic years, we were also positioning, for banks, to get onto the next phase, of transformation, which is the deployment, of more digitization, in their bank. So we spend a lot of time, particularly, with our existing base of customers. And we have quite a significant base. We have close to 150 banking license sites and 80 banking customers. So in the 2 years, we spent a lot of time positioning with them our roadmap, new offering in the space of digital banking mobius. And I must say, it has come into fruition, closed some significant contracts on mobius, around the region, which is why on the FY 2022 results, it's looking a lot better compared to the previous 2 years.
Yes, that's true. I mean, looking at the numbers here, really double-digit growth across the board. And Silver Lake is very well known for its software and solutions for the financial services industry. But I think one key transformation element we see happening was, if you compare, versus 5 years ago, two-thirds of your business in the past was related to, licensing, software licensing. But if you look at what the numbers are this year, really 75% comes from the recurring side, the maintenance side, the enhancement services account part. What was the strategy and the intention behind that shift from licensing to recurring maintenance and enhancement services revenue? I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right, to move towards recurring revenue, but how difficult was it to transition there?
Our motto has always been that once we acquire a new client and when we install software and applications, for that client, our motto has always been that we must not lose the client. And I think so far, we're very proud to say that in our over 30 years of operation, we have really not lost a single license site, that we have gone into. Each year, as you build up new license sites, that kicks in into maintenance and recurring revenue. That's why, as long as we can continue with that, as long as you can show the customers that once you have put in the solution for them, we can continue to support them and we can continue to have all the capabilities on the ground to help them run the system, they will continue, they will come to us, for recurring projects, which is why this is like what I always say to the public, it's a jewel in the crown for us. This 70% of our business, which is recurring, is very high margin. And we use that as a kind of a revenue growth in the low single digits, even though the new license, and new projects don't grow as much now as compared to, let's say, 5 years ago. So that recurring revenue, forms a very, very important cushion.
So is software licensing a loss leader where you're willing to invest in the client so that you can get the margins later? Is that part of the strategy intention here?
Well, no. Every deal that we go into, must be a deal that reflects profitability, to be fair, to our shareholders. So we don't, in fact, I think if you talk to the market, typically, they will say that your price are higher, than our competitors. But because we got such a strong, foothold, in the market, particularly in ASEAN, competitors were pricing lower so that they can take some of our clients away. But to be honest, we never go in a loss leader, so to speak. So, we continue to sell. I think the momentum for new licenses, new projects are still there. But I think the shift is different now. I think compared to 5 or 10 years or more, where banks have got more appetite for huge transformation projects, for even changing the core banking platforms, I think it's changed to now where putting core banking platform change as a lower priority, higher priority will be more pushing towards omnichannel digital banking type applications, but more putting a lot of emphasis on modernizing the core. So this is where the shift is, and also the shift more to smaller, mid-sized type contract, but a lot more of it. And this is what we are seeing, you know, that is changing in the industry.
That's the interesting thing, right? The marquee big contracts are all more or less stepped up. And so when you want to try and grow and acquire new customers, they tend to be smaller, they tend to be more niche, they tend to be more domestic and local centric. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair to an extent. I mean, definitely, you know, the huge, large transformation projects are not as many, as I said, but they still do come. And, you know, we're actually quite pleased, in FY 2022, we actually closed a couple of contracts which are in the realms of 100 million ringgit, you know, or more.
And they still demand innovation, isn't it? They still demand you to keep on refreshing your products. And I guess the biggest challenge for someone like Silver Lake is, how do you basically inject innovation into the business? Is it organically, or must you keep on going on through that buying spree?
It's a combination of both. We do expand, you know, through mergers and acquisitions, you know, that's for sure. I think if you track our history, a lot of, we have done quite a number of acquisitions, but also we are very, very selective. So when we do acquisitions, we must make sure that they're synergistic, that they do add value to our business, and we ourselves, you know, can add value into it. I mean, if you look back 5 years ago, you know, we made acquisitions on three banking entities. That kind of resulted into what we currently carry, Mobius, our digital banking platform. So that was a very strategic investment that we made. And now we got a digital banking product that we are taking as a very strategic, you know, product, you know. And we made acquisitions on an entity in Latvia.
Yes.
More so because they have got some very superior digital identity management solution that we thought could also add value, you know, to what we have, and also provide us a footprint in that part of the world where, you know, we do not operate.
Yeah.
And lately, quite aggressive on the insurtech space. Part of the announcements that we have made, you know, where we made investments in Dynafront, you know, one of our Malaysian companies that are in insurtech, insurance policy management. And also recently, we just also invested into a company called Encilio in Singapore.
Mm.
So the insurtech, insurance distribution, you know, platform kind of a business.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the expansion and your diversification to retail, insurance, and government later. And you already mentioned about the Latvian business that you've done to also help you grow into the government sector, right? Because it's quite powerful to understand that. But I just want to keep focused on the banking sector. Where are the white spaces that you feel still need to be accommodated and filled in, right? What are customers now asking you to do for you to complement your product portfolio at the moment?
I think even in the space that we're in, there's already quite a lot that we can do, want to do. You know, our biggest constraint, you know, really is, you know, the ability to take on opportunities in the market. I mean, in terms of what we're offering now, it's actually quite wide. I mean, if you talk about the core banking space, is actually a very, 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 very wide spectrum. There are many, many things. You can do replacement for core banking from another technology into ours. You can do a lot of modernization for clients. That's a significant part of the activity. And then there's a whole array of digitalizing the bank's operations. So there is a lot and a lot already.
So if I hear you correctly, the solutions are there. The big question mark here is whether banks are ready for this, isn't it? Because we talk about core, we talk about digitalization and moving to omnichannel, but to be honest, not every bank is ready, either from an infrastructure, from a cultural standpoint. Yeah. So when you have conversations with customers, what are the things you look out for to see whether or not a customer is ready for your solutions? Because when I hear you, I don't think the issue is the pipeline of the technology. It's whether or not the organization is ready to exploit it and make the most out of that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I guess in many ways, you're correct. But I think the adoption and the will to transform, the will to invest, different, you know, for different banks, and all depends on the scale, you know, that they want to embark onto. But one thing that we see that is very, very evident on with the onslaught of pandemic and post-pandemic, all banks are scrambling to put the digital, you know, strategies in place if they have not already. And this is where a lot of the demand is coming from. So some banks are very bold. Some banks are even looking at saying, look, now why do I have all this legacy core banking, you know, on premise where now technologies are available, where can I load everything, you know, on the cloud and run it?
Yep.
Run it with scale and run it with the kind of performance that they've seen before on premise. And we have actually proven to them that we can do it. So those discussions are already happening on the one end of the spectrum. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are banks come to us and say, look, you know, Silver Lake, this is not an area that we have expertise, no knowledge, you know, how can you help us, you know, to get a jump start, you know, here?
That's a key, isn't it? Because you buy all these products and solutions from you, but they have no clue how to apply them. They don't have enough expertise to take it and fully optimize it. So how do you make sure that you don't end up having clients so frustrated with the product because they just don't know how to optimize it to the best of its abilities?
I think we have been in this space for 30 over years. So I would say we have a very good understanding of what clients really want. I think this space, it's not an easy space. This space, the competition is actually quite intense. So you got phases of new players who come in, right? And we are one of the ones that kind of been standing in there for a long time. And I'll tell you, one of the key decision criteria from most banks at the end of the day is they'll stare you in the eye and say, look, technology is technology. It could be better. It could be slightly not better than what I've seen. But at the end of the day, when I have a problem, are you there to come and help me solve it? You know, I think that is a very, very important decision criteria for a bank. And we have always been there, even during pandemic, there's lockdown and everything during the Bank Negara, getting banks to do a bank moratorium processing and code changes. We are there to do that for them. So reliability and ability to support and a commitment to make sure that the system runs 24/7 is very important.
Ironic, right? That high touch point is still necessary to do this business extremely well.
Definitely, yes.
And so I want to talk about embarking on these bold new programs. We know there are 5 digital banking licenses awarded. Mm-hmm. They are due to come online in the next 24 months. I'm sure you're in conversations with many of them. Don't worry, I'm not asking you who are you in conversation with. But help me understand from an infrastructure standpoint, how different distinctive is a digital banking operation versus one that's conventional pursuing a digital platform? How different is the infrastructure? How would you in Silver Lake look at it differently between both types of banking solutions?
First and foremost, I think the award of the 5 digital banking license, it's very, very good for the industry. And I think it's also very, very good for players like us, without a doubt. So that is good. For the new banks or the pure digital banks, I guess the main difference is that, first and foremost, they're starting from scratch. They don't have the legacy of having all the legacy bank processes, you know, and branches. You can, if you have the right technology, the right people, and the right processes, and with the cloud in place, you know, you can virtually, you know, get a bank up and running very, very fast. So that is the main
time to market.
Time to market, you know, can be very, very, and solutions, you know, are there available. I think the critical question here, and I think as a lesson learned, and I'm sure the successful applicants are already looking into that, is at the end of the day, how sustainably viable can they be? Where can they get a sustainable base of customers that they can see profitability at some point in time? Because I think if you look at lessons learned from around the world, right, there have been quite a number of failures, these pure neobanks. In fact, I think I read the news 2 weeks back in Australia, World Bank just folded and they returned the license to the government. But I'm sure our digital banking experience has looked into that. At the end of the day is, what is the business model? At the end of the day is, where is the customer base? At the end of the day is, where are they going to compete? Are they going to compete with traditional banks? Because traditional banks are also very, very aggressively digitalizing. So are you going to take a slice out of the market, or are you going to go into the unbanked? The banks are not typically there. These are business strategy questions. But from an infrastructure point of view, they have less to carry. It doesn't mean that the cost will be significantly lower to run a new bank. But bear in mind, the people that runs a banking business in terms of cost is no different from the cost of the people that runs a traditional bank. Salaries of CEO, salaries of banking professional, et cetera. They need to take that into consideration as well.
On The Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Andrew Tan, Group Managing Director of Silver Lake Access. After their break, the diversification to insurance, retail, and government. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back on The Breakfast Grill. I'm in conversation with Andrew Tan, Group Managing Director of Silver Lake Access, one of the regional leaders in software solutions across Asia Pacific. You know, Andrew, we talked in the first half quite a bit about your banking products, your banking solutions, how you really have been able to penetrate and drive regional growth there. I presume the opportunity for growth there has its limits. Is that why Silver Lake took the effort to diversify itself beyond the financial services to areas like government and retail?
Yeah, I think I would Diversification, yeah. We don't want to just solely focus on one industry, banking. You know, I guess we are doing well on that sector. We are always exploring areas, synergistic areas, where we can deploy capabilities and skill sets to create a new market for us. I think immediately insurance, insurtech is what I call a no-choice space. It's a space that we need to get into, which is why we have started on that, you know, a few years back. And this is an area where we can see it from. Although in terms of absolute revenue, you know, it's a lot lower compared to the banking, but in terms of growth, you know, the sector brings in a lot of promises.
Insurance
industry typically lag in terms of investments compared to banks, but I'm seeing that we are at a tipping point, and I'm seeing that this is a time where we need to make, you know, investments to grow this sector, you know, further for us.
As you said, you've rebranded your insurance proposition firm. You're on 10 markets, 150 plus relationships across all the different insurance companies. But as you said, right, the numbers still don't stack up. They don't contribute substantially to the business. What's the aspiration? What's the goal? How do you expect insurance to contribute in 5 years, 10 years time?
Well, we are now a $100 million for insurance ringgit, right? I think banking is about $500 million. So 5 years from now, you know, we are looking at our insurtech, the fulfillment business, to grow, you know, to $500 million. So that's our aspiration. And the growth is going to come, you know, from many areas. One is through mergers and acquisitions. I think in the last year or year and a half alone, we have invested into two companies. We'll continue to look at investments into suitable companies that will help us to expand. We are predominantly focused on claims management software as a service, particularly for the motor insurance claims. I think, you know, we have got something like 90% of the market, you know, in countries like Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia. So we are expanding way beyond that, you know, into other claims, marine, casualty, health and wellness, you know, those areas where we are rapidly, you know, getting into. So there's a few areas that we are directing, you know, towards to expand our insurtech presence.
Do they look at things differently from financial services? So when you talk about digital solutions, will your insurance customers have very different framing, different thought process to how they select solutions versus perhaps banking customers?
The driving factor, as I see, you know, for insurance market, I think where most of the insurance firms are coming from is that they feel they are not reaching out to the market. Because I think if you look at the percentage of the population that's insured in ASEAN, we lag way, way behind compared to the Western countries. So there is a big gap in terms of the ability of insurance companies to reach out, you know, to those markets, whether it's in life insurance, whether it's in health insurance, whether it's in travel insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why you see, you know, a lot of players coming in there to help insurance companies bridge the gap. The companies, you know, they provide software solutions using algorithms, artificial intelligence, to improve the productivity, you know, of the sales agent, as an example. And there are companies that create platforms that connect the insurance providers. So they themselves become distributors of insurance to various parts, you know, the customer segment face, customer segment sectors, right? Insurance companies selling insurance to the airline, as an example, you know, through a platform provider, so an insurance distributor, you know, so to speak. So that's where, so it's creating an ecosystem, you know, of sorts. So this is where the, you know, the opportunities are.
So there are some overlaps. It's different from banking sector, but it's a natural adjacent sector to pursue and to build technology and solutions across the board. But one head scratcher is government, your pursuit towards government. And I noticed that there's been a concerted effort to offer solutions there. Perhaps it makes sense, and the acquisition of the 11 companies, CRX Infotech, right, where you provide, you know, digital identification, digital identity documentation, and smart cards. Tell me the strategy behind why pursuing government contracts and services is a key proposition, you know, because it doesn't sit naturally with the other core commercial sectors you pursue.
The key overriding reason for us to acquire a company is not so much to enter into the government space. I think the key overriding decision for us to acquire the company is because of the IP that they have in the EKYC, you know, in the identity management side of things, that we can also use, you know, as part of our offerings, you know, to wider markets, yeah, even in financial services. You know, that was a key overriding factor. Now, it just so happened that the kind of opportunities that land into their space, and they're doing very, very well in the space, supporting countries in the emerging countries, you know, where they are just about launching e-identity, smart passports, and that's where we are getting a lot of traction, you know, on that side of things. We are not aggressively pursuing, you know, those opportunities in Asia because I think, you know, those areas, you know, are pretty mature in most countries, even in Malaysia and Indonesia. But in Africa, so there's a lot of projects out there, you know, where they're implementing e-passports, e-citizenship, yep. And that's where our Latvia subsidiary is very, very busy on.
And this is a very, I mean, for me, thought-provoking in the sense that we always, in this part of the world, think of Silver Lake as very Southeast Asian-centric, very regional-centric, that the bulk of your revenue is probably still Southeast Asia, and that perhaps global ambitions is not higher priority, that the priority is actually to diversify your offerings and sectors within Southeast Asia. That's wrong, correct? It's actually being very niche and going global at the right locations at the right time.
Well, that's clearly one of the perceptions that we want to change. I mean, clearly, Southeast Asia is where we started.
But is it saturated for you?
Yeah. It's getting to a saturation point, but I think the opportunities are still there. But clearly, I think what the market needs to realize is that we are a global international. And I think the growth outside of ASEAN is a lot larger. And this is the reason, you know, why we need to expand. Even not just banking, you know, but insurance, you know, and even, you know, with our acquisitions in Latvia. And we'll continue to look out for these opportunities. So we've won a lot of deals, you know, in the regions of the Indian subcontinent, as an example, the Middle Eastern region. You know, Bangladesh is a growing country. So, you know, we have got quite a number of new banking deals that we won there. And even, you know, in a small little country like Maldives, you know, we just recently landed, you know, a banking deal there. So these are all very exciting for us, you know, as we reach out, you know, beyond ASEAN.
When people look at your share price, it's now trading about 40 cents. It's actually gone up, you know, and improved very much from its trough of, you know, close to 20 over cents, but it hasn't hit its peak of about 60 over cents, you know, in 2017, 2018. I guess two broader questions. Why do you think it's still not yet back at your pre-2018 levels? And what's driving the upward trajectory in the past 12 months? Because we've seen tech prices and tech stocks really under so much pressure in the past few months, right? Why is there a reversal in Silver Lake?
Well, give us time. I think we'll hopefully, you know, move much higher. But I think last year, over the last 12 months, I guess our stock performance has been incredible. I mean, it's gone up 65% to the current level, you know, despite, you know, a weakening, you know, technology sector, you know, around the globe. And I think this is a very clear recognition, you know, in the market that we have been significantly, you know, undervalued over the years. Now, I'm not sure what the exact reasons are. You know, from my perspective, it's about communicating to the market on, like I said, as opposed to seeing Silver Lake as only an operator in ASEAN, they have to see Silver Lake as a company, you know, that has got a lot more, not just banking, but non-banking, and also, you know, moving, you know, beyond ASEAN, and we've got a good story to tell. And that's the story that we're telling. I think underpinning our business is that we've got a very, very resilient, you know, business, and we've got a very, very clear path to a future world where we digitize, you know, our clients. The underpinning part of our business is that this is a business where our gross margin is 60% and net profit margin 25% plus. So, and that has been the consistent underlying financial, you know, foundation that we have.
So a healthy business, resilient cash flows, decent margins, that goes without saying, a cachet in Southeast Asia. But really is the issue with investors is that there is an issue about size, that it is not growing fast enough. Granted, you are growing, but if you compare yourself with global leaders where they do nearly about 500, 800, 400 over installations comparative to yourself, you're still about 70, 80 installations. So is the issue that you really need to move very much faster and much bigger? And in the end, is the reality that be considered you will be considered a takeover target?
Well, whether we're a takeover target or not, I do not know. We definitely have no plans to be taken over. Clearly, we want to be operators of this business, and we have a way forward to chart ourselves into the future. And the future, it's about how we can get back into very consistent double-digit growth. That is important to us as a first step, you know, which we have demonstrated, you know, that we have done in this financial year, and we're confident that we can do it again the next financial year and the following one. There's enough momentum in there. We have undertaken very, very a few strategic moves through acquisitions, through launching, you know, a new product, Mobius, you know, through our smart investments on the insurtech space. I think all this is going to fall in. Also not forgetting strategies, you know, around how we grow our existing base. So as long as we can demonstrate that, you know, then I think, you know, that will go back into a reflection of the stock.
Andrew, thank you for spending your time with us on The Breakfast Grill. Andrew Tan, Group Managing Director of Silver Lake Axis, one of the leading enterprise technology software and services companies in Asia Pacific. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.